Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 24. It was Lisa's short day, so she gathered her will and decided to get the rest of the data entered into the program. She worked uninterrupted for most of the morning with her headphones on, connected to an online program featuring classical music. President Riker's public service announcement over the EAS startled her at first, but she listened intently. The importance of his words washed through her like an avalanche, knocking down any structures she had built in her mind about the future. She was barely drinking age, and it appeared that gods and men had decided her fate before she even had a chance to be a mother. Her mind went numb as she resumed punching in the numbers into tens of thousands of rows and dozens of columns in the spreadsheet. Why was she doing this? What was the point? What did it matter? Something inside her drove her through the equivalent of entering names, addresses, and phone numbers from the Los Angeles phone book into a program that required enormous amounts of data to produce legitimate results. As though leaning backward over a cliff, holding onto nothing but a fraying string, barely able to hold a portion of her weight, she knew if she disconnected from this task too soon or grabbed too quickly at trying to save herself, the only thing keeping her alive would snap. She kept putting in the numbers, and by the time Rhino walked in the room, she was ready to collapse. "Hey, how long have you been here?" asked Rhino, putting down his book bag. "Since just after my 8 o'clock class let out. I was kind of doing a marathon session to get the rest of the data inputted," she said. "Did you hear?" began Rhino. "The president's broadcast?" "Yes." "I don't know what to do, Rhino. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing," she said, nearly crying. Her large blue eyes were slightly red as they looked back and forth from one of his large brown eyes to the other. He wondered if she could see the desire he had to hold her in his eyes. "Look, this project is my thing," he said, looking at her deeply. "It's not just the thesis. The world is coming apart, and this model may give us a timetable and perhaps even the structure of the inside of the planet. I know it's important. It is the one thing that gives me purpose right now. I would be lost without it," she said, reaching her hand over and placing it on top of his. He looked down to see her white hand, without any of the scratches and dents that life had delivered to his, laying on his enormous brown hand. He took his other hand and covered her hand and turned his lower hand over to hold hers in between. It was cool and soft like velvet, and he felt the power of his soul ignite deep inside. "If you'll stay with me and help me finish this project, I promise I will protect you," he said. His voice was deep and soft, and his lips formed around the words like a mighty angel to her. "There is no place I would rather be, Rhino," she said. "My name is Tautulu," he said. "It's the most beautiful thing I ever heard," she said, biting her lower lip from nervousness. He'd never kissed a girl before. Not really. He had a few groupies who had sex with him while he was in college, but they really didn't know him or care about him. His mighty heart was melting in the eyes of a beautiful princess with golden blonde hair, and something inside him told him there was only one chance to win this girl, and that time was now. "I want to kiss you, but," he began to explain, and before he could get the whole sentence out of his mouth, she fell on his lips with hers. She wrapped her arms around his warm neck, and he placed his right hand across the back of her white blouse and drew her into him. She stood up and walked into him. Sitting down, he was almost the right height for her to press against his chest, still armored with the muscle laid upon his frame by perfect genetics and 2 decades of lifting weights. "Oh, my God," she said. "I know this is right," she exhaled. "I am complete," he said. "Let's get the rest of this data in the program," she said against his ear. "I can almost see the patterns in it now." "How much longer do you need?" he asked. "Another hour at most. I just want to see what comes out. If we're right," she said, "if we're right, we could save millions of lives," he said. "You already saved mine," she said, kissing him again on the mouth and letting him wrap both his arms around her. "This could be the happiest day of my life," said Rhino. "I have a feeling you haven't seen anything yet," she said, putting her hands on either side of his face and looking into his eyes. She turned around and sat down at the keyboard with a stack of data sheets remaining and began to feverishly type in data. Rhino stood up and walked to the doorway, ducked under the header, and walked down to the professor's lounge. He opened the fridge and grabbed two cold bottles of Fresca and twisted the tops off between his index finger and thumb. He took a deep breath, as though he had never breathed before in his life, and walked back to the desk and set one down beside her. "Oh, my God, thank you. I was just thinking how thirsty I was," she said. "I'm promised to be everything you need for the rest of your life," he said softly. "Tao Tulu, you're everything I could ever want," she said, drinking from her green bottle of Fresca. "How much do you lack there?" asked Rhino. "About 1,000 readings," said Lisa. "Jeesh. Well, that's close enough to run the program. We can enter the rest once we have a look at the trends. What do you say we run it now?" asked Rhino. "You know, I've been sitting here for about 2 months doing this, and I can begin to see patterns in my mind. I mean, there are nodes of concentration." "How does the program work?" asked Lisa. "It works off my theory that planets do not form as solid balls, but rather as hollow spheres. I got the idea when I first started working with Professor Wesson about 4 years ago. I used to think it was impossible, but when I finished the code adaptations for this program, the only thing left was putting in the actual seismic data. Unfortunately, it only existed in hard copy, because the USGS puts them out as PDF files. Kind of a nuisance. But if it wasn't, I wouldn't have met you," said Rhino. "Well, let's run it and see what comes out," said Lisa. "We can do it on this computer, but it will take hours. It's best to come back later tonight and see the results. Or we can walk over to the physics lab and use the Cray, and it will be done in about half an hour. I think we should keep it here and go get something to eat in the meantime," said Rhino. "That sounds perfect," said Lisa, and she packed up her book bag to head out with Rhino. "Your car or mine?" said Lisa. "We should take my Jeep. I had the seat moved back, you know," he said, holding his hands out like he was appearing for the first time in front of her. "Oh, yeah. What size shoe do you wear anyway?" she asked as they walked together. "It's only an 18, but I'm not really a basketball player," he said. "Yeah, that wouldn't work on my little Toyota." "Where shall we eat?" asked Lisa. "I know it sounds weird for a Samoan, but I love Mexican," he said. "Let's go," she said with a broad smile. The two climbed in his 5-year-old Jeep Cherokee, and they started driving across the campus to the boulevard toward the restaurant. They went slowly to accommodate for the speed bumps and turned the corner around the building heading up toward the boulevard. "Hey, there's the professor," said Rhino. He rolled down his window for the oncoming car, and it slowed down as well. "We're going to get some Mexican. Want to come with us?" asked Rhino. "You know, I was just debating whether to eat or go back to the office. Didn't want to eat alone." "Sure, I'll follow you," said Loretta. Within a few minutes, Rhino was sitting across from Lisa and Loretta at a table. "Did you hear the broadcast?" asked Loretta. "Yeah, we both heard it. I mean, separately. Lisa was already at the lab punching in data," said Rhino. "Wow, you got an early start today," said Loretta. "I didn't know what else to do," she began. "After all these months, I'm beginning to see a pattern in the data, but I can't quite visualize it. Besides, the world is coming to an end, and I wanted to be with him." She said quietly as she looked across to Rhino. "It's okay," said Loretta, reaching forward and placing her hand on top of Lisa's. "It's okay. Anywhere, we're running the program while we eat," said Rhino, trying to shyly change the subject. "You got that pile of data put in already? I thought it would take another week or so," said Loretta. "Well, there's more than 550,000 files in there now. She has about 10,000 left to put in. I think, other than the string of 6 pointers we have had over the last 8 months, we should have a good picture of what she looks like," said Rhino. "She?" asked Lisa. "Gaia," said Loretta. If the planet adheres to my theories, then it quite possibly is alive, in a physics sort of way. It's conspicuous, or at least it responds to consciousness as an energy input, she explained before she realized she was defending her thesis again with a 21-year-old undergrad student. That's okay. I'm new to this, and it starts out to be the only one credit hour as a senior project, but I can't stop thinking about it. I have had dreams about it, she said. Loretta looked at Rhino, who had changed the look on his face. You're having dreams? About what? Asked Loretta. About the union of the polarity, if my review of her lab notebook is accurate, said Rhino. It's like two soap bubbles joined together, but not all the way. At first, they look like a vesica Pisces, you know? In Pythagorean history, it displays a ratio of creation and is considered a holy figure because the ratio of its width to its length was believed to be 265 to 153, or the square root of 3. I started seeing this symbol everywhere. That number, 153, is even written in the Gospel of John as the number of the fish that Jesus miraculously caught. If you put it sideways and extend the ends just a little, you get the fish, right? It was in Freemasonry, and just about every ancient account of creation had it. Anyway, when I heard the president's first broadcast last April, I couldn't get it out of my head. I felt like I was supposed to be involved with it. So I took the class, said Lisa. Well, now we know why you love her, said Loretta. I mean, you know, as a student. Oh, hell. She covered her face with her hand and looked down at the table. It's okay, boss, said Rhino, reaching out to hold Lisa's hand. I love him too, said Lisa. I'm where I'm supposed to be. Well, the rules say it's inappropriate, but screw 'em. You're old enough to make up your own mind as far as I'm concerned, said Loretta. Anyway, you remind me of my other grad student, Bet Dyson. Yeah, but no, said Rhino, shaking his head. I don't mean the leather and the Harley. I mean the passion for the esoteric evidence, said Loretta. It's all driven by the data, though, said Rhino. I know, you're the number cruncher. Still, it is amazing how you have this connection. You two make a great team, said Loretta, placing her hands on top of theirs. Good. Let's eat and see what the program has produced, said Rhino, scooping another chip with salsa into his mouth. The girls laughed and reached for one themselves and waited to make their order. Within an hour, they had finished their meal and were headed back out to the lab. The sky was overcast and the air was barely moving. They rolled the windows down and moved through the light traffic just listening to the radio. Rhino wondered how much longer the world would look like this. The pressures working on the structure of the Earth and the conscious energy gathering into what appeared to be two mighty forces were almost overwhelming to consider. He started to consider the set of energies, and it quickly became too much to resolve in his mind. 7 billion separate data inputs should be random and normally distributed. That is to say, the large single population should have an average high value and trail off in a bell curve in higher and lower directions of consciousness. That's what you think. But the more he thought about it, the more he began to see two nodes in the data. It was like two bell curves slid slightly apart so that there were two peaks. He shook his head and tried to remember he was driving. When he got like this, sometimes he could see nothing but the graphic expressions of the data, treatment like a Gaussian slideshow. They arrived back at the lab, and the program progress bar was nearing 98%. Well, that should only take a few more minutes, said Rhino. I'm so excited. I can barely stand it. I'll be right back. I have to powder my nose, said Lisa, standing up and heading for the door. Oh, yeah, right, said Rhino, slightly embarrassed and figuring out what she meant. He opened his mini-tab program and began importing the file into the statistic program. He just wanted to see the standard deviation and the distributions of the data. Within a few minutes, Lisa came back into the room. What you doing? She asked as she put her hands on his massive shoulders. I'm letting mini-tab crunch this really quick to see what the data looks like in statistics. It'll only take a few minutes, and by that time the graphics model should be done, he said as he clicked the mouse without hesitation from one screen to the next in the program. Within a couple of minutes, the data was transferred from the Excel sheet to the Minitab sheet. I'm just going to do a six-pack to see if my hunch is correct. Holy Twin Peaks, Batman, said Lisa. Well, that's not supposed to look that way. That would mean that he paused to get the solution by rubbing his temples. It's one set of data added chronologically over a 10-year period, said Lisa, leaning forward and pointing past his head to the screen with her elbow on his shoulder. Yeah, but I only put it into 28 groups by the cycles of the moon, just for reference. So how in the hell did it come out in two groups like that? He asked. Go get the professor, he said to her. Within less than a minute, Loretta had returned with Lisa. What is this? She asked. It's a Minitab six-pack. I grouped it in 28-day cycles like we have done before with the geomagnetic data, but the raw seismic data came up showing two nodes, like this, he said, pointing to the distribution curve on the screen. No one has ever looked at this data before like this, she said, standing up straight and running her left hand backward through her hair. No one has ever had data like this in a single file before, said Rhino. If we say that there's a correlation between human consciousness and earthquake data, they will laugh us out of the survey, she said. If we don't report it, then we are denying what we are seeing, said Rhino. You mean people are causing earthquakes? Asked Lisa. Well, in a word, yes, but it's not that simple. My theory is that the planet itself is alive, as I explained earlier. It has a symbiotic relationship with the sentient beings on it, and because we are the only ones with choice and free will, we are the only ones who can actually change the energy point of interface on a moment-by-moment basis. We have always looked at the data on moon phases because the stretching and squeezing of Earth is caused by the orbit of the moon, which takes 28 days to complete, said Loretta. Yeah, and if you look at the actual data points, you can see that the number of quakes over 5.0 over the past 10 years has been increasing exponentially, which means the period leading up to and after the Union of the Polarity event has as many data points as the previous 9 years. There's a separation here and here, said Rhino, pointing to the screen. Well, what does your program say? Asked Lisa. Oh, crap, that's right. It should be done by now, said Rhino as he minimized the screen to reveal his program dashboard. Are you ready? He asked, hovering the mouse over the OK button on the screen. Yes, said Lisa, putting her hands back on his shoulders. Rhino clicked the button and the graphic began loading. It started at the top and began moving down the screen of his 64-bit desktop. Line by line, the picture completed itself. The colors began to fill in with red dots, blue dots, green dots, and yellow dots overlaid on a holographic image of the planet. Pressure waves and shear waves were plotted from the receiving stations back to the point of origin. The result would be a 3D image of the planet using over 500,000 data points spread over a 10-year period. The group remained silent as the image began to fill in going down the screen. Billions of calculations produced a model of the planet like no one had ever produced before. The image was stunning and beautiful. There in the screen were two very distinct planets, displaying one inside the other like two spheres coming apart. One was highly energetic and the other was lower in energy, the reds and yellows indicating the lower energy waves making up the planet, while the blues and greens made up the higher energy version of the planet. Look familiar? Asked Rhino. Hell yes, it does, said Loretta spaciously. What? Asked Lisa. We saw this from the jet airplane last spring, said Rhino. We were weightless at the edge of space, and we saw this very same thing happening. How did you get to the edge of space in a jet? Asked Lisa. It was a Gulfstream jet, and it's a long story, said Loretta. What do we do now? Where do we send this data? Asked Rhino. We need to talk to the president, said Loretta. The president? Asked Lisa. Don't worry. It's a local call, said Rhino. I'll call Smith, said Loretta, getting her phone out of her pocket. She thumbed the number into action and put the phone to her ear. Hello, Agent Smith, said Loretta sweetly. Hi, Loretta, said Smith on the other phone. Do you remember that data that was missing from the thesis the president wanted? She asked. Yes, I do, he said. Well, Rhino and his assistant Lisa have just completed crunching the data. More than 500,000 data points. There is no doubt now. What do we do now? Asked Loretta. I'll get right back to you. Stay close to the phone, said Smith as he pressed the screen to end the call. He quickly pulled up Jones's number and pressed send. Smith here, he said into the phone. What is your report? Asked Jones. The professor's team had completed the data analysis, said Smith. Is it as bad as we thought? Asked Jones. It's much clearer than we thought. They need direction, said Smith. I'll get back with you. POTUS has a new chief. Stay close. And Jones ended the call. The agent next to the president never takes calls, but they can send text messages. Jones entered Caltech team done. Need direction, and pressed send. Then that message vibrated Hadid's phone, and he took it out while he was standing with his back against the wall of the Oval Office. He and Lorraine were sitting across from one another at the president's desk and speaking quietly to one another. Excuse me, Mr. President, he said. Yes, Hadid, what do you have? Said Riker. The Caltech team has finally completed the model. They need direction, said Hadid. Riker looked at Lorraine and waited for her response. She was in charge of his schedule, his budget, and would select who would see the president. She looked toward the window for a few seconds like she was waiting for an incoming message from somewhere. Bring them and their data here to the White House. Tell them to bring their computer and their files with them. We need to be clear and positive when we put out the message, she said. Riker nodded to Hadid. Hadid typed back to Jones, bring Caltech team to D.C., FMP. The phone vibrated in Smith's hand. Smith, he said, POTUS says transport the Caltech team to D.C., fastest means possible. Wait a second, said Jones. Computer and all relevant files, extended stay, got that? Roger that, said Smith, and he ended the call. Again, he thumbed the phone into action. Professor? Yes, go ahead, said Loretta. The president wants you, your people, computers, programs, and files to D.C. for an extended stay, fastest means possible. I'm calling in a charter, nonstop. How many people and what cargo? Asked Smith. Three people, she said, looking at Lisa and Rhino, who both nodded. We'll have about 200 pounds of files and a few computers. Let's say 500 pounds of cargo, said Loretta. When can you be ready to go at the Hawthorne Airport? He asked. Hell, I don't know. 10 p.m., she said. Got it. See you at 10 at General Aviation. I'll have your stuff cleared. Meet you there, said Smith. Okay, no problem. But the phone had already gone blank. That's it, gang. Call your parents and let them know you have official business in Washington, D.C. That's all you have to say. I'm not going through what we did the last time, she said. We wouldn't make it without Dick and Kyle, said Rhino. You know that's the truth, she said. Where are those guys now anyway? Still in Pasadena? Asked Loretta. Rhino shrugged and turned to Lisa. Do you need any help getting anything? Clothes? He asked. No, I can drive back home and pack up and be back here in 2 hours. Is that okay? Around 8 o'clock? She asked. We could take my Jeep. It has a large cargo space in the back, and I have a luggage rack on top if we need it, said Rhino. I wish I would have kept my pickup truck now. Oh, well, that's good. We'll meet back here at 8 with our toothbrushes, said Loretta. Wait, will we need any money? I mean, I'm a student, and I... Lisa began. No, the university will pick up any expenses the government doesn't, but I have a feeling we won't need a thing, said Loretta. Go, you two. See you back here at 8, and then we're off to see the wizard. And with that, Loretta walked out the door.